Welcome to the She's a 10 times 5 show with hosts Lori Jabbar and Michelle Emick. We're bringing public figures, subject matter experts, and other accomplished guests to the Studio 50 table to serve you up the best tips, tricks, and key takeaways that all us midlifers want to know about. Okay, time to join us for some times 5 fun. Let's go. This week's guest is Randy Crawford, a confidence and coping coach for young adults and their parents. Randy helps navigate the pressures of school, social media, work, relationships, family, sports, and anything else that might be making you feel stuck. This week's episode, Randy will give us 5 important takeaways that she's learned through her coaching to help us better parent our kids. Let's go. Leah Black Beauty Skincare. Okay, all you teners, this is super exciting. Not only was Leah Black one of our more popular past guests, but we've been using her products for the past 2 years, and many of our listeners and followers are super fans as well. So here's the deal. If you love clean, premium skincare made with natural ingredients and with proven results, then you need to look no further than Leah Black Beauty Skincare at leahblack.com. Since the mid-1980s, Leah Black Beauty Skincare has been a leader in all natural skincare products. The Leah Black Beauty Skincare regimen gives results that are quick, obvious, and clinically proven to clean, lift, firm, tighten, tone, and brighten your skin. There's a twist. In 2018, Leah Black Beauty pioneered the science behind CBD benefits in skincare, which is now integrated into her luxury skincare line. All right, here's the good stuff. You can experience the results for yourself. We have a special limited time offer for our listeners where you can enjoy 30%, 30% off all individual skincare singles with the special pricing code 10x5 when you shop on leahblack.com. That's the number 10, then X, then the number 5 at checkout when you shop on leahblack.com. That's leahblack.com. Leah Black Beauty, the real beauty in premium CBD skincare. Hey everyone, welcome to She's a 10 times 5. I am Lori and I got Michelle here. Hey Michelle.
Hey Lori.
All right. We got one of our own in Studio 50 today. I'm super hyped about it. It's Randy Crawford and we are going to talk the 5 takeaways from what she's gleaned and learned from working with a lot of young adults and their parents about what we can avoid and what we need to do with regards to parenting.
Yeah. I mean, people say that all the time, but it doesn't come with a manual and we are all making mistakes. I know Randy would probably say the same. She does too. Right. But the more we can be, well-equipped, the better, because it ain't easy and it takes a village.
Yes, ma'am. And I think we do fall into the trap where we overthink things. And, you know, the other thing is a lot of times we don't know because sometimes our kids just don't want to talk to us about certain things. So,
and I'm sure we're all worriers. There's probably so many moms out there that are shaking their heads like, yes, we all worry. We want the best for our kids, but we don't always know the best way to approach it.
Okay. My crystal ball prediction, because I know this is one of her really big anchors in her business. I bet we talk a lot about social media and I am here for it.
Same.
All right. All right, Randy, let's go. Woo! Okay, guys, we have a great topic today. We are going to dive into parenting. And this is kind of an interesting topic. I have an adult age kids, so it's very, very different now. And we live in a very different environment than when we were kids. I mean, we were off the damn grid. And that's not the case today. Right, Michelle?
Yeah, I mean, it's completely different. We live in a digital world and our kids are obsessed.
Yep. And we used to wake up and we used to get on our bikes and go and our parents had no idea what the hell we were up to. And so today we have a perfect guest in Studio 50 with us. It's going to walk us through what she knows and has learned because she has a thriving consulting business. It's Randy Crawford of Randy Crawford Coaching. And she works with teens, young adults, and their parents on how to effectively navigate. Welcome, Randy. Hi, Lori. Hi, Michelle. Thank you so much for doing this episode. I'm really grateful to be here.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm super excited we're going to talk about this because you're going to give us some takeaways that we need to put in our hip pocket. But I was just having this conversation with a group of my gals. And, you know, as your kids get older, you think it's going to get easier. And that is so far from the truth. From my lens, as they get to be young adults and start to navigate the world on their own, the issues still are there. They just become more complex. So, Randy, I'm going to lob you up a cookie. I want you to take us through what your recommendations are for us parents.
Okay, so let's go. I love that. First of all, I couldn't agree with you more that our perspective on parenting is so incredibly different. We're talking 180 degrees different than when we grew up, and we were feral. We fought in real life. You know, there was no digital fighting. There was no hiding behind a keyboard. And what this generation and the younger generations especially are going through is positively brutal. And I am a common sense person. You guys both know that about me. I don't need studies. I don't think any of us need studies to tell us that social media has incredibly deleterious effects on our children today. And I know that it's easier, you know, when you have a little baby in a stroller to put the iPad in front of the baby and to go shopping or go to eat or do whatever you need to do. But I really can't tell you how many clients that I've spoken with that make the comment, if I only knew now what I, what, if I knew then what I know now, I would have done things very, very differently. If I could rewind, I would never have let the phones in the bedroom, or I would, you know. So I love the five tips, and I want to start with the first one because I am a life coach and I do work with young adults, teens, and their parents, as you said, Lori. And there's three things that people come to me with: asking for help with coping skills, confidence, and decision making. And so I want to discuss that today because the first one that is so important to me is is raising resilient children who understand how to overcome adversity. So what do I mean by that? We as adults do not like being uncomfortable, but we as adults really do not like seeing our children uncomfortable. Nobody wants discomfort anymore. And so what we do as parents is we jump in as the fixer and we fix things. If we see a problem, we want to remove that problem before it ever even impacts our children. And by doing this, the children and the kids and the young adults that I see are currently dealing with the impact of that so that they don't have coping skills. They don't know how to deal with failure. They don't have the confidence to go out and try new things because as parents, we've removed all of that from them. So I have a fantastic quick anecdotal story, Lori, from a mutual friend of ours. And I've asked her if I can use this when I give talks. And she said, please go ahead, use it freely. We laugh about it in my house to this day.
Do we have a name?
She has a name. Her name is Janie. And if Janie had told us all of this when we were much younger, I think none of us would have experienced a lot of what we experienced. But while we were talking one day about what I do, Janie said, Randy, I have a crazy story for you. Many, many, many years ago, when my oldest child was, he was maybe in first grade, maybe in kindergarten, she was out to dinner with a good friend who was older and who had older children. And one of the children had experienced drug problems. And so Janie says to this gal, my God, you know, how does that even happen? How does your kid get into drugs? And the woman looked at her and said, I'm going to tell you how. Because her whole life, I went in and I fixed everything. If she forgot her lunch, I ran it to school. If she forgot her homework, I ran it to school. If she needed anything done, I did it. And I did everything for her whole life. And therefore, when she started adulting, she couldn't cope with anything. She turned to drugs. So Janie just puts this in the back pocket. She says the very next day, she wakes up, sends her kid to school, and there's a school assembly they weren't aware of. Her son wins an award and is called up to stage and is very kind of freaked out because his parents aren't there. He didn't know he was going to win the award. He gets nervous. I think he started crying.
He got quiet. He got shy. And the whole experience sucked. So after the assembly, he goes to the nurse's office. They call her and they say, you know, your son wants to be picked up. So she gets on the phone with him and says, what's the problem? What's going on? Are you sick? And he's crying. He says, no, I just had this horrible experience at school. And she says, Randy, I literally flash back to my dinner. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't go pick him up. This could lead to all these problems down the road. So she does exactly what we all need to be doing. She supports him. She says, listen, I'm going to leave you at school today. You're going to be fine. I'm going to pick you up after school. We're going to go get ice cream. You're going to tell me about it. And we're going to talk it through and, you know, talk about what could have happened and, you know, just get all your feelings out. But I'm not going to come pick you up at school today. And I said, you know, thank you for not sharing that, you know, because she's raised three incredibly resilient children. And it's a really interesting story because I like to explain to parents, our kids are like the leading actor in a movie. And currently as parents, we're acting as the director and we're directing their lives. But really what we all should be concentrating on is winning best supporting actor or actress, because our role as parents is to support our kids. So I'm not saying cut them off. I'm not saying ditch them, but I'm saying when we do everything for them, because it may be easier at the time, we are really and truly hurting our kids in the long run. And those are the kids that I ultimately see, and they don't have the ability to make a decision or to deal with real adulting situations because they've never had to.
Well, I'm going to add something. And, you know, you're kind of in the thick of it now, Michelle, because you have an 11-year-old. So you're just starting to get down the runway of where you have to make some big parenting decisions with your child. But I found, and I'll give us a scenario. We hired a coach, you know, college counselor to help my son, both my sons actually, through the application process. And I find that sometimes outside voices encourage parents to fix things as well in order to get the outcome they want for your kid as their counselor or, you know, whatever. Would you agree with that? Either one of you. I mean, you know, would you agree that there's people, teachers, principals, outside resources that expect nowadays parents to kind of put on their superhero cape and make it all okay? Let's start with you, Michelle. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'll take any help I can get. But I, you know, I agree. I was listening, Randy, to everything you said, and I'm like, all right, let me write this down. But it's so true, because I think about when we were growing up, it was like, fend for yourself, like, just fix it. And we have all gotten, I'm guilty of it too. I think I have a balance, but I mean, I've definitely, I'm guilty of this stuff, like trying to, you know, fix everything. And I think that your advice is right on. And this is the type of stuff that we want to hear. This is exactly what we want to hear.
And it's so hard to do, Randy. I mean, it's really hard because, you know, we're a society where we, you know, especially with social media, attach our egos to sometimes the success of our kids, and it's hard to let go and peel back because we love them so much and we want them to, you know, a lot of times have the lives that we weren't able to lead at their age,
right? I think
right?
That's what it is, right? I mean, it's like different. I was like a latchkey kid, you know, I don't know. I was just like, figure it, I don't know. Our parents were like, figure it out.
Yeah.
now we coddle. I don't know. I'm blaming COVID.
Yeah.
Well, Lori, okay, so what you just said actually brings me to my point number two so perfectly. You just teed me up. Because the second tip or of my five things I want to talk about is listen to your kids. So what do I mean by that? Because our kids constantly are telling us things and we really are not truly, truly, truly listening to them. And we may be listening to what they say, but we're not reading their body language. And our kids are trying to tell us things all the time, but we don't hear them because, Lori, what you said, we don't want to hear them because, see, society is telling us that what is important today is having money, being rich, being beautiful, being your social media influencer. All this stuff is what's being, you know, poured down our throats. Beauty, it's all part of what society says is what we should want. So let me give you an example of the listening oftentimes a parent will call me and ask me to coach their child, and I'll have a first conversation with a parent. I have had more than one that have called me and said, Randy, my daughter or my child is devastated because they did not get into the D1 college that they really wanted to get into. Let's just use the sport of soccer. But there's been multiple. So I'll say, okay, you know, I have an understanding of that. And then I'll get on the Zoom with their child. And as a coach, you don't offer advice, you listen. But what you do is you ask questions to ultimately understand what your client wants, where they are, and where they want to be. I cannot tell you, ladies, how many times I've gotten on these calls, and the child doesn't even want to play a sport in college. Mm-hmm. Their parent wants them to play a sport. Their parent wants them to go to a certain school, but they have no desire to do that because they've learned from other people that it's like having a full-time job, and so it's having two full-time jobs. And now imagine me, I'm sitting here as a coach, and you know, your goal is to help the client, which is the person you're speaking with. You've got a parent who clearly wants their child to, you know, as a parent, you're saying to yourself, listen, this school wouldn't even contact you, be it for your grades alone, but you're so lucky because they see you as an athlete. And the kid's like, but I don't want to do that in college. And so listening to your children, watching their body language, it's just such a big deal. And I really want to preface this by saying every single one of these 5 points I'm going to make, I am as guilty as the next guy of making every single one of these mistakes with both of my children, who are both young adults at this point. I've done every single one of these things wrong until I learned and I really understood much better what it meant to let them, they're the ones living their life. And so while we may think we know what's better, they know what's better. They know what their heart is telling them. And I just don't think we listen to them often enough, because when we do hear them, we're listening with what we want to say back in mind. So we're not really listening to hear what they're trying to tell us, which is, this is what I want. Even as a parent, I know it is so hard. You see what will be better for them in your mind, but it might not be better for them in the long run. And then we see these kids that, again, are getting to school and having breakdowns and dropping out and having all sorts of mental health issues because they made a decision because they didn't want to let their parents down, but it was not the right decision for them.
Yeah. I always say this, well, with my own kids, you know, I got a little bit of, especially with my eldest, you know, this is about you, mom, you want me to go to this type of school. And I would, you know, kindly remind him that, you know, I have my sweatshirt and I'm very proud of it. But I always say to other parents is, if your child is not happy, nothing friggin' else matters. Nothing matters, because you're exactly right, Randy. I don't know how many people that I've seen and friends that I've had that have kids that go off to college or make some type of career choice based on either sports or what they think they should do, and they're miserable and they come home.
Mm-hmm.
Facts. Yeah.
Facts.
Okay, Michelle, I got a question for you really quickly. So you have, you know, a little bit of a younger one. Are you starting to see her feel as she goes through this process of getting towards middle school and whatnot? Does she feel these types of things? And do you feel those pressures as a parent?
Well, you know, I was thinking when you were talking about that, Randy, I was like, I wonder if it's different based on the age. Like, I'll just give an example. I feel like, I hate to use the word lazy, but at that middle school age, this age, it's kind of like, I don't want to do anything. And I have told her, I'm like, I don't care. Everyone in my family plays sports. That's not her jam. But I want her to get some physical exercise, and swimming is kind of what she likes. She doesn't love it, but she likes it. But I'm like, you are going to swim, and you're going to just do it 2 days a week. I don't care if you go to competitions. I don't care if you're the slowest one on the team, but you're going to do something for the physical exercise. I feel like that's something that, and she, I've noticed when I pick her up lately, I'm like, how was practice? She's like, oh, it was fun. So, but it's like pulling teeth to get her to do stuff, because if she had her choice, she would sit and play video games all day. So I feel like I'm being a responsible parent because I'm getting her to do something, even though, I mean, if she had her choice, she would do it. So I don't know. I feel like I'm not like a crazy parent, because I know enough of those that are like literally starting their kids at, you know, you're practicing 5 days a week because that's their whole goal. is, you know, I'm going to get my kid into D1 and whatever. But I feel like there has to be a happy medium. So that's kind of where I sit. I don't know whether I'm doing it right or wrong, but that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, yeah. No, and by the way, I mean, I don't even have the word should in my vocabulary, Michelle. I feel like every single family is different. Every single child goes through a very different experience. I'm giving generalizations of what I see on my end after kids have gone through their whole life and are now young adults that basically have had parents that have jumped in and done every single thing for them. That's where I'm coming from. So I'll give you my third tip is interesting with decision making. So again, it is staggering, you guys, the amount of young adults that literally cannot make a decision. And we could be talking about big decisions. What fraternity or sorority do I want to rush? What job or internship do I want to take? All the way down to really little decisions. Like what do I want to eat for lunch today? What do I, you know, can't even, I mean, there are people whose parents have made every single decision. And so I think it's really important to teach our kids from a young age how to make decisions. And there's two ways we make decisions, right? One is with our head and one is with our heart. I would argue that the more important decision is to be made with your heart, because your heart is constantly whispering to you and constantly nagging at you. And when you go to bed and you wake up in the morning, your heart is still telling you, like you girls with the podcast, you know what you want. Your heart is telling you, I love doing this. And your brain, that yells at you more, and that's nagging at you more. And so when I talk to kids about decision making, I say, listen, ask yourself, you know, obviously we all know that do the pros and cons, because that's the obvious. But then I like to step back, right, and look at, like, what are the consequences of that decision? Take a deep breath and think about, how does that decision make you feel in your heart? Like, does it make you feel amazing, like, yes, I'm stepping into my path? Or does it give you fear? Because if it's something you viscerally know, you know in your heart whether something is right or wrong. The problem is everybody is going so fast right now, just so fast, and everything is so chaotic. It's like we're putting out fires. We shouldn't be putting out fires. We should just stop, take a deep breath, and really think about all of our options and what feels right in our heart. And I think that as parents, it starts when our kids are really young. We just make so many decisions for them. The sports are going to put you in. This is what we're going to do, you know, today. This is where we're going to vacation. I don't care what it is. All these decisions are made by us, and we never stop to let our kids make decisions. Therefore, as young adults, they have a very hard time. They might be in a job they really dislike, but they don't know how to make a decision about leaving it because they've never had to make a decision before. So it's a really important yet simple one that we could be focusing on.
Yeah. I really like that kind of balancing of heart and head, because what we don't teach our kids, at least, you know, I mean, I've tried to do a much better job now that they're off on their own in college, but mistakes are okay. And, you know, they're not life-ending types of things. And sometimes, you know, you do something and you lead with your heart and you make a decision. It doesn't mean it has to last forever. And it doesn't mean that it's going to change the course of your life completely. And it might be a mistake, right? And I think that's okay. And I think our kids need to constantly be reminded that it's a journey with twists and turns, and mistakes are okay.
100%. Failure is part of the process.
I'm listening. I'm in. I'm like, yes, 100.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll go to point number four. So this one I love, you guys. I'm pretty obsessed with this one. There was a psychiatrist who did marriage counseling for years and years and years with families, with parents, adults, couples. And after many years, I think it was like 18 or 20, he realized that couples had the same five issues. So his name is Dr. Gary Chapman, and he wrote a book called The Five Love Languages. And he basically says that we fall into these love languages no matter what the issue is. And why I particularly love this is because Lori knows this about me. I believe everything in life is communication. And when we understand the five love languages, we can much better understand our children and how we can communicate with them. And this one just hit me over the head like a ton of bricks when I did a deep dive. So I'm not going to deep dive into the five, but here's what they are. You have words of affirmation. You have physical touch. You have quality time together. Acts of service, meaning things that we do for our children to make their lives easier. And then we have gift giving, but it's really technically gift receiving. So here's what I see. A lot of parents today in this age of fixing and doing everything, a lot of us focus on acts of service. Again, I'm going to use a sports example because that's what I know well, and I work with a lot of athletes. You have parents who will go above and beyond to do things to help their child thrive and succeed in a sport. Getting them extra coaching, flying them all around the country, make sure they're on the right teams, all this stuff. And their children may not reciprocate the love that they're expecting or the thank you so much, mom and dad, this is amazing. Because if we watch them, what they really want to do is hear you say to them, you're amazing. Like, you just did an amazing job. I am so proud. That's it. Or maybe they just want to spend quality time with you. Here's another one. They constantly invite you to go to Starbucks, let's just say. And you go to Starbucks with them, but you're on your phone a lot, or people are calling you and texting you, and they might make comments to you like, you're always on your phone. You're like, I'm not always on my phone. That's a weird thing to say. But what they're trying to tell you is, this is our quality time together, and this is what I wanted, and you're ruining it. So number one, there's a really fun little test you can take to learn your love language on the Gary Chapman website. If your kids are like my kids, they're like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I get it. What you can do, though, as a parent is observe your children and how do they show love to their friends? How do they show love to you? Possibly how do they show love to their other parent? And then you can pick up on their love language. And the sooner you understand that, and all of our kids are different. They have different love languages. The sooner you understand what their language is, the better you will be able to communicate with them. And I just find this to be just so absolutely amazing. It literally changed the dynamics of several relationships that I have when I started focusing on that.
Wow. I've read the book. It's a great book. And I've never thought that way, Randy, to apply it to your children and probably even friendships, other relationships.
All relationships. I read it too. I think it's a great book. And I was laughing because I'm like, my daughter is like all of those things. But she wants the gift. She wants the time. That's okay. She can have it all. But she's definitely called me out. Like, mom, put your phone away. And I'm like, yep, guilty. Like, she'll say, you're on the phone all the time. I'm like, yep, you're right. And I'm putting it away. So yeah, kids will tell you. And we definitely need to be listening.
I think that the phone thing is such a good thing to bring up, Randy, because we're all guilty of it. But I have, since COVID, I made this conscious decision to say, fuck it. And I never bring out my phone. If I'm with friends, it's in my purse. If I'm with my kids, it's in my purse. And I've noticed that when I do that, no one else brings out their phone. It's an interesting thing. If you put your phone hidden somewhere, then people won't put their phone on the table and look.
Yeah, it's true. It's a respect thing. You feel you feel somewhat disrespected when someone's phone is, I can even understand someone's phone being out but turned upside down, but if someone's phone is out and flipped up, as in I'm ready and willing to take calls, it just says to you, the other person, and I'm specifically talking about your kids, it says to them, that you spending that time with them, you know, again, it's just about, you could spread yourself, be an inch high and a mile wide, but I really believe that your child would rather be with you one-on-one with no phones and no distractions for 15 minutes than an hour where you're together, but you're just on your phone the whole time. People want your attention, period.
Absolutely.
Amen to that. I mean, honestly, like, because my kids are very social and, you know, they don't want to spend 2 hours with mom at a lunch. It's just not going to happen. They want to go hit golf balls or do whatever else with their friends. But if I can get like 15 quality minutes with them, it just helps our relationship so much more. I find out so much in that 15 minutes.
Yeah, I love going to like theme parks and stuff with the kids, my nieces and nephews. And we actually went to the water park a month or two ago, which I'm not a fan of. But what I loved was we had to put our phones away in the lockers. And it was great. It was like 4 hours, no phones. We just had so much fun. And I'm like, we need to do more of that.
Yeah.
100%. I'll give you my fifth now, which is, so this is interesting to me. I believe so strongly with everything that I have that our mind is our biggest performance tool that we have. So I'm going to go back to the parent that spends money on getting their kids. Let's just start with all of it. They spend money on extra coaching. They spend money on physical trainers. They spend money on a stretch lab, getting their kids stretched. They spend money on nutritionists. They spend money on college counselors. They spend money on tutoring. We literally throw money, and that's all totally normal.
What kind of friends you could coach in here? What's with these people? They got like a good stretching coaches.
And yeah, I mean the kids. Yeah, it doesn't suck.
Some rich people problems.
Is no, it's not.
It's actually really. It's funny you say that, Michelle, because it's really not. I work with people that are not that person, but because they believe so strongly that playing the D1 sport.
No, I totally get it. I mean, we have two D1 just in my immediate family. Like, I get it. I know there's so much that goes into it, but
what people are all missing. And so I want to just say, I hate to be that person that says like, let's normalize. No, but I just think that it is so important and critical that we get out of the mindset that everything is like a mental health problem. We've so overblown that as well.
Yes.
What we have. And so some of the clients that I work with will say to me, Randy, do you think I really have these mental health issues? And I have to say, what you have is normal overwhelm and normal stress and normal anxiety that we all have. But these kids today, they have so much on their plate and so much that they're doing and so much extra that their parents do for them. Yes. I find it mind-boggling that the parents aren't saying, let me hire either a therapist or a coach or someone who can just be there as a third party option for my child, to just so that a third party doesn't come in and give your kid advice. What they do is they listen to them and let them just take the mask off. You know, these kids, they wear masks all day for different people. A mask for when they're on a team, a mask for the classroom, a mask with their friends, a mask with their parents. When they're with somebody where they can just talk with no judgment, they take the mask off. They finally are able to just vent and get stuff out. And when you talk about stuff and it gets out of your brain, you just sometimes feel better without even any, you know, like do this homework kind of a thing. You just feel better. So knowing that our mind is our very biggest performance tool, I think that we really need to get parents to get in the mindset that on top of all the other coaches you're getting, help your kid get their mind right, because you can keep throwing all this other stuff at them, but it's not going to get them anywhere because maybe it's not even what they want, because maybe we're not listening back to point number two.
Yeah, it's not their dream. It's not the kid's dream. It's their dream.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what's interesting is when my kids got to the high school phase and I saw, you know, you see the anxiety if you're kind of looking in and leaning into what your kid's up to, and you see the behavioral types of things, and when you communicate with them, you know when there's that pressure and anxiety starting to happen. I'm really, really keen on getting a therapist or having a coach, because what it also does is it helps you be a better parent. Your kid walks out of a session and they understand even more clearly what they need from you as their parent, and hopefully they communicate that with you. So indirectly, us parents are getting coaching too when we send our kids off to get their minds right.
Well, I just think that we need to understand that not every kid today has major, massive mental health issues, but they turn into major mental health issues when they're unable to express their emotions, express how they feel, learn and understand coping skills, learn and understand self-care. And these are just, you know, I'm one of those advocates that does not understand why we don't teach this in schools. I'll never understand that, because coping skills and understanding how to deal with our emotions, to me, is at the basis of everything. And starting in middle school, these kids are hit with a lot of stuff, and they need help navigating it, period.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is I think at that middle school age is we start to somehow, it's society, it's social media, it's parents, it's all these outside influences that encourage kids to choose a lane. And then once they get on that, they're moving at warp speed in that lane, and they're so shit scared to hop out and assess. They just keep chugging along like a little assembly line. And I think that contributes to a lot of anxieties. We are moving so fast with these kids, and they're moving so fast that I think that they don't have a chance to assess how they're feeling. And then, you know, 3 years, 4 years down the line of moving down that lane, that's where you start to see the mental health issues, because they feel trapped, in 100%. My opinion.
100%. You're very accurate. It's, and you know, another thing you see is, I could be working with a girl who has some, you know, issues that have nothing to do with eating. And all of a sudden, after, you know, a few months down the road, they could, you know, we just turn our attention, and they get so focused. The social media, you guys, is really very, very scary. And I mean, I don't even want to go there, because we've done our five, but we just, as parents, especially if you're a parent listening with younger children, really need to help our kids with setting timelines and boundaries around using social media, because it really is very, very destructive. And again, we do not need studies to show us that. I see it in the people that I work with that are young adults now, and it's only going to be much, much harder for these younger ones that are starting out as young as 1 year old, sitting there on the iPads when their parents, you know, are at restaurants and shopping. We need to be very vigilant about social media.
Yeah. Amen to that. Yeah. Okay, Randy, this has been amazing. And I'm sure you have another five. So we might have to have you back.
We might do part two.
Part two, baby. Okay, ladies, I thought this was a great rapid fire sesh. I'm going to go read Love Languages again and talk to my kids.
Yeah, fun.
All right.
Communication.
Yes, communication.
Thank you so much,
listeners. Yes. Okay. Until next week. Adios.